Okay, so I'll be presenting the F8 architecture. For those who've been to last year's talk, the first few slides with the motivational introduction will be familiar, and but we'll get into some more details then. Now the F8 is an 8/16-bit architecture. Now, why do we still bother with 8/16-bit architectures? Well, the main point is they are still used in huge numbers in a large number of devices. Even the laptops most of us are carrying with us tend to have an 8051, which is an 8-bit core, as a keyboard controller or somewhere deeply within the Wi-Fi chip. For example, the Realtek Wi-Fi chips do contain 8051 cores. Now, in general, there's even 4-bit microcontrollers in use sometime. Well, bought a cyclocomputer for my bike, took it apart, turns out there's a 4-bit microcontroller in it. And of course, there's the familiar 32-bit 64, which are now dominated by ARM and probably soon RISC-V. But there's still these areas of 8/16-bit, where the 32-bit devices are too big, not just in terms of their core, but also in terms for memory requirements, both for program and data storage. Now, these low-end 8/16-bit architectures are typically programmed in C. They are not that expensive. The typical range is about a cent to a euro. So if some of them are a bit cheaper or more expensive. The data memory tends to be in the range of, well, about 60, 70 bytes to about the same number of kilobytes. And the program memory tends to be a few kilobytes, typically something like 4 to 128 kilobytes of program memory. The market is dominated on one hand by proprietary architectures like the STM8 by STMicroelectronics, and then these ancient things like 8051 or some Z80 derivatives and such, where all patents have long expired. We don't have like a good modern free architecture. Yeah? And in the 32-64-bit market, we have RISC-V, which is doing very well. But we don't really have this free architecture that has enough momentum in the 8/16-bit area. And that's what I'm trying to change with the F8. Now, a little bit of background. The small device C compiler is a C compiler targeting 8-bit systems. In particular, architectures that are hard to target in Clang and GCC due to their irregularities. It's a compiler. There's the other tools you need, like assembler, linker, simulator around. It works on a variety of host systems. It targets quite a lot of different 8-bit architectures. It has optimizations that make sense for these 8-bit architectures, such as a register allocator that can deal with irregularities, get slow for a large number of registers, which would be a problem if you use this in GCC or Clang, but is fine for 8-bit architectures with a small number of registers. The user group is embedded systems microcontroller programmers and a few retro computing enthusiasts, because, well, old 8-bit architectures are supported too, not just the current ones. Now, I'm a developer of the small device C compiler. And what I learned about the 8-bit architectures we're targeting, what makes sense, what makes them a good target for a C compiler, a lot of that experience, of course, went into the design of the F8. And a really important point is you want an efficient stack pointer relative addressing mode. Yeah? You put your local variables, you want to put them on the stack, because that's how you do re-entrant functions in C. If you don't have it, either you have to give up re-entrancy by default. That's what you typically do when targeting the 8051. Only make those functions re-entrant where the programmer or user really says, okay, I need recursion, or indirectly or directly, or I need it re-entrant because I want to call it from an interrupt controller. But if you have an efficient stack pointer relative addressing mode, then everything becomes much easier and you can do the right thing, and it's an efficient thing to do. Then you want a unified address space. Yeah? You want to have, say, okay, this pointer, and you have your instruction for pointer access, and that's it. You don't want to say, okay, this pointer, now let's look at the top bits. Now we do a switch statement with 5 different cases, depending on which address space it is, I need to use a different instruction, like you do have on, let's say, the 8051 or quite some other of the less elegant 8-bit architectures. Next point is, it helps to have registers. The experience shows that the STM8, for example, with its stack pointer relative addressing mode and unified address space, it's a bit lacking in registers, so there's a few corner cases where even an old Z80 can be more efficient. So you don't need a lot of registers, but having some really helps with code generation. Then the experience from the PDORC devices is that, yes, you can replace peripheral hardware by having an extra core or an extra hardware thread where you're emulating your peripheral device and then do that in real time because it's this extra core, it's not bothered by the rest of the system. But you need to think it fully through and you want it supported at the C level. Yeah? The PDORC devices, they're typically programmed in assembler and you notice in the instruction set that, for example, C11 atomics do not map nicely to that instruction set. So you want support for these multi-threading and atomics and thread local storage in your instruction set so you can both program those things in C and be able to not use a lot of your die space for peripherals. The point about the irregular architectures is we have a register allocator that can deal with it well and then they are fine for code generation. Now DCC with its, or Clang with their typically Chitin style graph coloring register allocators can't deal with irregular architectures well. Yeah? They want kind of a RISC architecture. Every instruction should have its register operands and it shouldn't matter which register it is. Yeah? If you have an instruction, it should be available for all registers and should have the same code.